Morning, everyone. It's great to see everybody. Very special welcome to all of you. See a lot of faces that I haven't seen in a while. So, you know, that always happens. Easter brings everybody out, right? Wow. Well, that's a good way to get started. Leaning. Cups leaning. Thank you, Curtis. I it was interesting because I was actually just about to say that I am going to attempt not to embarrass myself today. No, seriously. It was interesting. I was talking to my wife last night, and she let me know that spring break, the in-laws are coming to town. I said, well, when are they going to get here? She said, well, they're leaving on Saturday, so they should be here Saturday night. And we hadn't heard anything, and I said, are they going to stop and maybe, spend some time, like, get a hotel or something? Are they going to come all the way through? She said, no, they're coming all the way through. And I said, okay, so I'm going to make it a point. I'm going to pray about it. Make it a point that I'm not going to embarrass my wife in front of her parents. And then the first thing I do is drop a cup. So good morning again. We're going to start over. It's great to be here, Easter, Resurrection Sunday, and one of the things that is always difficult when you get up and you have to speak and do a sermon on Easter, it's always difficult because Easter is one of those things where it's like you know what the topic's going to be, right? It's going to be the same thing. I mean, I remember thinking when I was like 10 or 11, I was thinking, I think we've heard just about every possible sermon you could give on Easter, right? Even as a little kid. And so it's hard to be original. It's hard to, dig. I mean, you can always dig deeper because Jesus was very complex. But my thought today was maybe we shouldn't try to come up with something more creative or something out there or something that's different. Maybe what we need to do is just ask a very simple question. Who is Jesus to you? Who is Jesus to you? Maybe we just need to start there because, you know, it's one of those things where people spend a lot of time parsing and going through the details and debating even who Jesus was. And yet sometimes we have to ask the question, who is Jesus to us? Because it needs to be personal. And a day like today where we celebrate the resurrection, the question I have is, who is Jesus to you? The title of the sermon today is Tomb Raider. If you don't know what that means, hopefully you'll figure it out here in a few minutes. But I want to start by looking at who is Jesus. Now, this is probably a picture that a lot of people have seen growing up. Obviously, there are some real questions about the authenticity of this photograph for obvious reasons. And then you have some people who consider, well, Jesus wasn't, you know, really this exceptional person. He was kind of just this, as this book, this guy wrote, a marginal Jew, and he wasn't diminishing Jesus as much as the title would appear. But even some people have taken the creative liberties to say, well, what would Jesus look like if he existed today? Would he really be this, you know, warm, fuzzy character that everybody preaches him as? Or would he kind of be an outlaw, a revolutionary, somebody, you know, this guy, he's kind of out there, right? You know, and then there was this, I think this was a couple of months ago, I saw this on Good Morning America, where somebody tried to go back and reconstruct an actual 3D image of, like, what would Jesus actually look like, right? And you're thinking, first of all, how can you even know this stuff? But you get all of these questions about, you know, what would Jesus be like and who was he? And I want to go back to Matthew chapter 16. We're going to start reading in verse 13 where it says, then Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi. He asked his disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? They replied, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others, Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. But what about you? He asked. What or who do you say I am? Simon Peter answered, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Jesus replied, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, For this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by the Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Then he ordered his disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. This is very important because when we think about the Messiah, okay? See, all those other people, the prophet, and you're a great teacher, and you can be a lot of things, but the Messiah, that carried a very special significance. There can only be one. This Messiah was expected to come and do something that nobody else could. And so for Peter at this time to be able to recognize that, to see how significant he was, that he wasn't just teaching them to be better Jews. He wasn't just teaching them to be better people. He was the one who was to come in the world so that after he died and then came back to life, that we would all have hope for eternity. He recognized that. And this can't be stated enough that knowing who Jesus is or parsing the details and trying to determine, well, you know, was he 5'9" or was he, you know, 6'3" or was he skinny or all these other details, knowing those things don't matter as much as what he means to you. That's why it was so important that Peter made that declaration, that he made that statement, this is who you are. You're the Messiah. You are here to save the world. Do we think about Jesus in that way? Do we understand? Do we internalize it? Do we personalize it in that way? You know, it's interesting. We go, there's a lot of documentaries that come on TV. They're showing a lot of these. I know CNN's been running these different specials. There's this one that they have now that's been running on, I believe it was one of the presidents, Eisenhower, somebody like that. And then, you know, they go through all these different things. There's a movie even out on Churchill. I heard it was good. I haven't seen it yet. And just like with Easter, we go through this thing where we memorialize, if you will. We remember, you know. Right now, especially because this is, it marks 50 years since the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., you're seeing all these different documentaries on that, right? And this guy right here, a lot of people don't even know who this is. They may have seen it, but they don't recognize the face because he wasn't particularly famous. And I draw this up. His name is Tamir Rice. Tamir Rice was a 12-year-old who was shot in the park while he was playing. He was mistaken for whoever, whatever, right? And he was shot and killed right there in the park. This is up in Cleveland, Ohio. And I bring his picture up for a couple of reasons. I'll point out the second one in a second, but the first one is because when we think about Jesus, one of the things that's important to remember is that Jesus, you know, not only did we not have, like, you know, 24-hour news back then, but he wasn't necessarily that big a deal, right? It wasn't like he was Gandhi or he was some world-famous figure, excuse me, at that point. He was kind of this ordinary guy that was ruffling feathers, and so they got rid of him. And I want to look at this again because as I ask the question, who is Jesus to you, sometimes we forget that if it's not personal, if Jesus it doesn't personally mean something to you, then really all he is just some far-off distant figure, right? John chapter 20, starting in verse 1, says, early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the entrance. So she came running to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one Jesus loved, and said, they have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't know where they have put him. So Peter and the other disciples started for the tomb. Both were running, But the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. Peter got tired. He bent over and looked in at the strips of linen lying there, but did not go in. Then Simon Peter came along behind him and went straight into the tomb. He saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. The cloth was still lying in its place, separate from the linen. Finally, the other disciple, who had reached the tomb first, also went inside. He saw and believed. They still did not understand from Scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead. Then the disciples went back to where they were staying. We see here that they're shocked because they get there. First of all, they're shocked because the stone had been removed. But then you get inside and there's no Jesus there. You know, it was interesting. I once debated this back in college where I was talking to someone, the team we were working with as we were setting up the argument about Jesus and the validity of Jesus and his resurrection. You know, we were pointing out how they have literally gone to great lengths to find fossils, bones, remains from dinosaurs that are supposed to be tens and hundreds of thousands of years ago, and, you know, different incarnations of different animals that have evolved. And with all of the information, with all of the research, with all the findings, and there's a lot of people with some incentive too, they've yet to find any remains of Jesus. They've yet to find anything. And this is very important because sometimes people need proof. You know, we see that where she says, hey, they're gone. No, he's gone. And they run there and they get there and the only thing left is the linen. Sometimes we have to step back and understand the significance. Not just that we come around every year and it's Easter and, you know, the kids are having fun and, you know, my son, they'll, yay, you know, jelly beans, candy, and, you know, I especially love, this is personal, I especially love this. Every time this time of year comes around, they have this commercial with this chocolate bunny and the Reese's peanut butter cup, and they get together and they have this egg. Like, I find it, first of all, creative, but I just love it. It's, you know, Marvin Gaye. But it's like you get all these different things where people celebrate the holiday, but they forget the significance. They forget the personal significance of the fact that the stone's been removed, and now we're 2,000 plus years later, and we still can't find any bones. Can't find any DNA, any hair, no skin, no follicles, no nothing. And sometimes we need to step back and think about how significant that actually is. You know, the empty tomb, for those of us who have faith in who Jesus is, the empty tomb recognizes and symbolizes the most important thing in all of history. Because that is what our hope is in. That because he lives, because he's no longer in that tomb, we have an opportunity to have eternal life. You know, I pulled this picture up of Tamir Rice because it was interesting. I was trying to think, I was stretching, trying to think of something that was significant to be able to share this next point. And one of the things that happens is I remember this before my wife and I got married. We were still living in Nashville. She would drive up to Louisville, where she's from. And tragic story, her uncle was killed by his girlfriend many years ago. And his girlfriend, basically, she, you know, after so many years in Kentucky, the laws are set up where you can get parole, right? You can actually, you know, go to a board or hearing or whatever. And her grandmother would go every year down to Frankfort, to the capital of Kentucky, and she would petition that this woman shouldn't get out. She shouldn't be let free. And, you know, Sharice, you drive up there, and, you know, it was kind of a big deal in the family, right? And what's interesting is that for everybody else, I remember reading about it in the paper because I wanted to understand. I did not know her Uncle Alvin. I didn't know Mary Alice's brother. And so I wanted to read about it and understand it. And one of the things that is interesting is that the further time gets removed, the further you get away from the situation, it becomes just a story that happened 25 or 30 years ago. It becomes just a situation. It becomes, well, this person's reformed, or maybe they're different. And I remember this was several years back, much after I had read this one particular article, but I remember talking to her grandmother, and she says to me, she said, "That was my son. I don't ever want this woman to get out. She doesn't deserve to get out. She took something from us." And forget where you fall on whether or not a person is reformed or the fact that people come up for parole for crimes and maybe they should get out. Because, you know, all it takes is for you to watch, you know, again, cable news or something, and you see where they tell all the unsolved mysteries and all the crime stories and Dateline. And we can watch these things almost like they're entertainment. We can watch them almost like they're happening in some far-off place. But it's different when it happens to you. It's different when it's your son. It's different when it's your brother. You know, we see how Mary reacted there. You know, we think about something that happens to us that's meaningful, that's personal to us. And the question is, how personal is Jesus to us? Because if it's personal, see, the thing about it is, you know, Sharice's grandmother isn't thinking about her son only when that parole hearing comes up. She's not only thinking about it when the anniversary of his death comes. She thinks about it all the time. You know, she told me, she said, "I don't think about it as much. It doesn't create the reaction of tears and crying as much, but it still hurts the same. There's still a hole there. There's still something very personal about that." You know, I was actually watching an interview with Tamir Rice's mother, and she was saying how he's become a rallying cry and a cause for all these different advocacy groups, but it's my son. You know, when's the last time, ask yourself, honestly, when's the last time Jesus wasn't just a historical figure or just even if you say he's the Messiah, when's the last time he was your Savior? That he actually went to the cross, he died for you because you know how messed up your life is without the power of God. John chapter 20, continuing on in verse 11, says, "Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, 'Woman, why are you crying?' 'They have taken my Lord away.'" Notice there she says, "They've taken my Lord away." Not the Lord, not somebody else's Lord, not the Lord of all. "They've taken something from me. And I don't know where they have put him." At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. He asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it you are looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, that's kind of amazing, right? Thinking that he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him, and I will get him." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them that he had said these things to her. I raised a point about Tamir Rice and his mother, and I talked about, you know, Sharice's uncle, and all these different instances. Everybody in here has a story that you can relate to in that way where it's personal to you. See, it's different when you're family. It's different when Jesus is yours. It's different when it's your brother. Notice how he said, "Go and tell my brothers." It's different when it's personal. It's not just a day then. You know, some of Martin Luther King Jr.'s kids were talking. They were saying how it's 50 years for you all as far as a memorial. It's 50 years without my dad. We come together. We celebrate Easter. We celebrate resurrection. You know, he rose again. But is it personal to you? You know, it's different. The celebration of the resurrection should be different for us because it's personal to us. Because we know the significance of the sacrifice that he made on the cross. And because we understand that the tomb is empty, that he's risen. And because it should be personal to us, it should also be something that we ask ourselves, do we only think about it today? Or is it something that we will think about moving forward? I'll close with a few questions. Who is Jesus to you? Be a historical figure, a teacher, maybe even a controversial religious symbol? Or is he your hope? Does Jesus represent your hope? Does that empty tomb represent your hope? Or is it just a story that you read as you flip the pages in the book? Does it matter more to you how Jesus is depicted and portrayed in our society or what he's done for you in your life? I raised this question because a lot of times as I was showing kind of the pictures, I was sharing with one of my friends how, you know, certain pictures were just totally outlandish and I wouldn't even dignify them by, you know, showing them. But the fact is, it's like people really take a lot of creative liberties, you know, and take a lot of creative license on how they depict Jesus, how they show him, what they say about him, people even completely being disrespectful. And sometimes we can get so caught up on how others perceive him that we forget what it means to us personally. So you can say a lot of things about my wife, good or bad. It wouldn't matter if they were true or false. I know what she means to me personally. I can give you accounts of sacrifices that she's made. Same thing with my parents. Same thing with any number of you. I can tell you, doesn't matter what you characterize a person as, I know what this person means to me. That's why Jesus has to be personal. Because suddenly it doesn't make a difference. Suddenly it's not that big a deal if a person says that he was a little darker or a little lighter. What has he done for your life? What does he mean to you? What does this day mean to you? Is the fact that Jesus came back from the dead something personal for you? Does it create emotions and feelings that lead to actions or just debate? Just thought. Is it just something that makes up good conversation? Or does the fact that he's risen actually impact your life? Does it actually make you feel something? You know, I feel something. It was interesting because Tamir Rice, I believe it was probably, it's at least been 5 years ago. And as his mother is doing this interview, this is, you know, again, I think it was the end of last year. So it's been almost 5 years, and as she's doing the interview, her voice starts cracking and she starts crying. You know, and the instantaneous thought could be, well, but it's been so long, and I understand that was your boy, but how much time passes before it no longer feels personal. It no longer feels relevant. It no longer hurts. It never goes away. Like Teresa's grandmother told me, she says, look, I can contain myself, is how she put it. I can contain myself, but the feeling never goes away. The emotions of it never go away. Like I said, when it's family, it's different. When Jesus does something, when he's changed your life in a significant way, this isn't just a holiday. It's just the date that we remember. But the other 364 days of the year, do they matter? And that leads to the last question. How will your life over the next 364 days indicate what the resurrection means, that it matters more than just one day? What's going to be different between now and next Easter? How is your life going to change? How has Jesus made an impact on you that says, you know what? Even though it's not Easter, even though it's not Resurrection Sunday, even though everybody's not wearing fluorescent pink and blue and green and everybody's got their, you know, nice Easter colors on, even when it's the middle of the summer, even when it's the fall, even when we're not even close to this time, how is Jesus' impact going to be seen on you? And so I want us to consider that, because maybe we don't know who Jesus is. Maybe we haven't had that impact made on us yet. Maybe Jesus hasn't made that impression on you. If Jesus hasn't made that impression on you, but you want to understand, but you want to know who Jesus is, I invite you, I ask you to come. When we stand and sing our song of invitation, come forward. We want to pray for you. We want to pray with you. We want to help you understand who Jesus is. Maybe you're a person who, you know Jesus and you've seen him, but maybe you're a little bit like Thomas, and we didn't read about Thomas, but maybe it's like, you know, I need some evidence. I need some proof. Yes, I hear what you're saying about the tomb being empty and the stone being rolled back, but I just need to touch his hand. I need to feel the nail prints to know it's him. Is that where your faith is? We want to help you with that. We want to pray for you and with you. We want to teach you. We want you to understand how important this is, not only to us, but we want you to be a part of this family of believers who understands exactly what this day is about, not just today, but every other day throughout the year. Please stand with me as we sing our song of invitation.